That was part of my interview recorded at Rob Nutt's Hardware this past Tuesday. Part two of the interview is coming up in just a moment. This is KORC.
Dr. Cornell West will be visiting Corvallis the evening of Monday, January 22nd. He will be at the Oregon State University campus from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lascelles Stewart Center. It's free and open to the public and will be live streamed on live.oregonstate.edu for those who are unable to attend in person. Dr. Cornell West will join Dr. Robert George in a conversation focused on the role of higher education in restoring civic dialogue. The talk addresses the urgent need for universities to lead the way in reviving the art of civil discourse in a society increasingly characterized by division and confrontation. This event is co-sponsored by the Office of the Provost and the College of Business. Dr. West and Dr. George share contrasting ideologies. During this event, both will share insights on how higher education can cultivate a culture where challenging discussions are conducted with empathy, respect, and a shared pursuit of truth, thereby reinforcing the foundations of a vibrant democratic society. This event is slated for Monday, January 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lascelles Stewart Center. It's free and open to the public and will be live streamed on live.oregonstate.edu for those who are unable to attend in person. For more information, you can do an internet search for Difficult Conversations: The University's Role in Restoring Civic Dialogue with Drs. Robert George and Cornell West. You're listening to KORC, public, listener-funded community radio.
We now return to our exclusive on-site interview at Rob Nutt's Hardware.
Now, just beyond this room we're in, we have another part of the store, wood floors, and what all is in this room?
Well, this is kind of just warehousing of an old products, old promotional stuff, stuff that we bring down seasonally for window display, that type of stuff. And a lot of, you know, this is where we store our ladders. And we have the cabinet hardware back here, and we change out from summer to winter with goods on this back wall back here, and then put it back out in front in the spring and summer when we used to do that. So
you also have cables, and, all kinds cables, of cables, rope.
Yeah. So
you sell by the foot.
Yeah. Everything's we cut by the foot, sell by the foot, thread by the foot. We have steel, all that other stuff that's back here.
And on the floor, we have a measuring device. Unit.
That's our measuring device on the floor, yeah.
How many feet long is this?
I think it's 75 feet.
I have cut fence here a number of times and used this as a guide.
Yeah, it works. Still here. It hasn't been removed since I've been here.
It probably predates you then.
It predates Tory, too, I think, yeah.
And I see on the wall, there's a farm and ranch supplies sign. If it's hardware, you name it, we have it. That old reliable.
Sitting next to an outhouse. In the picture of an outhouse.
Is that a metal sign or is that paper?
That, I think, is paper. Yeah.
Possibly 60s, 1960s?
Yeah, I would say probably back 50s and 60s.
Yeah. There's a lot of historic stuff on the walls, both related to Rob Nutt's, and then you guys have some display shelves with sandpaper assortment, branding.
Yeah, those are things that we would...
An old RCA television here.
I thought you were going to take
the Space Saver color track. Hey, maybe. It has.
Yeah, that'd look good in anybody's.
What are you selling that for?
Oh, gosh. Make me an offer. Yeah.
I am eyeballing some of these other signs that and other items that are going to be for sale as Rob Nutt's Hardware, a fixture of downtown Corvallis, is closing its doors at the end of February.
Mm-hmm. And so we still have a lot of plumbing and supplies available and left. And to sell, and so come on in and take a look around. We got some electrical, we got some chain, got plumbing and supplies that we'll be moving. Cabinet hardware, tons of cabinet hardware that we'd like to move, and the racks as well would be going with it. And so we've got lots to go.
Have you got any big plans for retirement?
No plans, which is, I think, what retirement is all about. There's no plans. So for the first couple of months, probably nothing. We will probably eventually, like everybody, get in the car and travel, go visit friends and relatives, and then see where it goes from there.
So, and maybe even do some volunteering with KORC with that good radio voice of yours.
I might do that. Yeah, thanks.
Well, Scott Lockwood, I'd really like to thank you for your time. And for those of you out there listening, 2nd and Adams in downtown Corvallis, if you have not been to this historic location with wooden floors, why don't we, Scott, why don't we take a walk on these wood floors? Wow, listen to that.
Yeah, some of them still move. Oh, this pretty solid part right here. You want to be careful.
The old wood floors, the old smell
of
this unique location. One of the longtime people who you may recognize from the store is Tori, who is a descendant of the Robnett family, who has owned this store for over 100 years. What are you up to on this afternoon?
Well, we have somebody who's offered to buy some of our fastener section here to go to the university departments, and so we're inventorying it, giving them a quote, blocking it off so nobody buys the rest of it before we can sell it to them.
All these nuts and bolts are going to the university.
Not all of them, but these sections that we're working on. So yeah, we've got some wonderful customers that are buying a lot of our things, and in fact I think we sold the whole steel room, which is nice. And getting these things out of here to new good homes is a good thing, so we can go on.
How are you feeling knowing that there is an end date and there the time is limited?
I'm actually feeling fairly relieved to have made that date happen and the decision, and a little premature for us. We thought we would be the end of March, but we're rolling with it, and we just want to go on to the next chapter. You know, I've been here for 46 years and worked all my life. Scott's worked all his life, and so we're going to take a little break and see what our camper where our camper can take us, and then we'll go from there. You know, whether we get jobs or volunteer or you know, go back full time, it's up in the air yet, but we just need to take a break for a while.
Have you guys been eyeing any parts of the country to go vacationing and camping?
I think we're going to go down through California and up through Arizona. We know some people in Arizona, kind of that direction, just to test it out and make sure we like doing it and can afford to do it. And gas is kind of expensive. And otherwise, our goal is to go all the way across the United States and back. So we're going to take little short trips to start and make sure we can do it.
So what has been your favorite part of working at Robnett's Hardware over this? You've been here for 46 years.
Yeah, I know. Go figure, right? I guess helping people, really. You know, getting them the right things, making sure they get the right stuff, solving their problems. Most of the time they're so grateful for, even if it's just a little screw and an anchor to solve their problem, so grateful for the help. And I think that's probably the best part. I mean, I was lucky enough to... 14 years old to walk in here and start learning things after school, and the business, I was able to step into it pretty easily. You know, my dad could feel confident after a while to step away and let me handle things, and Scott and I together now and in the last 30 years. And
we're joined by Tori Lockwood. Thank you again for your time and for this wonderful hardware store that has been a fixture in this community. I myself have only been here since 2005, but this has for a long time been one of my favorite spots in Corvallis.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's like I said, it's a little bittersweet that we're doing this, but we just sort of had to make things happen. And I know it's going to be sad for a lot of people, as well as ourselves. I'm not quite sure, you know, how we'll feel about it when it's all said and done, but it's the way things are. Yeah. Change happens.
Sometimes, yeah, change is the only constant, and there are just times that age, economic pressures, and change of interests, it all factors out to create the next stage in life.
Yes, agreed.
Thanks for joining us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics. This is Dan Krall recording at the Robnetz Hardware location, the historic Robnetz Hardware location at 2nd and Adams in downtown Corvallis. They are closing their doors at the end of February, and it is the end of an era of local hardware here in Corvallis. You can hear Scott in the background helping a customer. The service here is something that I have always thought was as well outstanding, in addition to the authentic feel of just a cool hardware store. And as I'm here at the edge of the room where the nuts and bolts exist, they've got all these different rods and wires, different metal materials, old lamp burners, door handle parts. It's going to be a sad end to not be able to come and shop around for some of these specific parts that you just can't find elsewhere. But as Tori knows, as Scott knows, change is always constant, and there is no one factor that can be named as the reason for this store closing down, as Scott told us. The final day of business for Robnetz Hardware is going to be February 29th. This year is a leap year. You'll be able to come to their location. They are liquidating the entire store. Thanks for joining us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard every Sunday from 1 to 2 here on KORC.
My name is Sally Shaw. I live in South Corvallis on Crystal Lake Drive, but I previously lived on Northwest 11th Street when I first came to Corvallis in 1994. From the very beginning, I have been shopping at Robnetz because I liked the idea that it was privately owned. I enjoyed the fact that I didn't know a lot about taking care of my own home, and the staff there was always so helpful. They could explain why I needed something, why I didn't need something, how to fix things. I found from them the resources I needed to be able to be a single homeowner in Corvallis. I appreciated them then, and I've continued to go to Robnetz whenever I need things. It's just such a nice, small hardware store. And when I have a problem, I've always been able to go in and we talk about the problem I have. And they have such marvelous solutions. So I am very, very unhappy that they are leaving, because I saw them as such a resource for all of people, not only who are living in South Corvallis, but throughout the city of Corvallis, if only people would understand what a marvelous resource they are. But it reminded me of a Vermont country store, that feeling to it. It was a feeling of warmth. And of course, I realized that they didn't have the breadth of inventory that the larger stores have. But that was all right, because the inventory they had been thoughtfully purchased. It had been purchased with a purpose, and the quality of it was always superb. I didn't have to worry about buying things that wouldn't work or that had been shoddily made. But Corvallis, more so than many other small towns, has been very conscientious about attempting to continue to do business with the small, privately owned stores in order to hold on to them. Two in particular, of course, Grassroots and the Bookbin, I value very, very highly. And I continue to hope that people will go to the Dark Side Theater, because I have a lot of admiration for what Paul and Joey and his staff have done to try to maintain an excellent theater viewing here in downtown Corvallis.
Why is it important for people to support local?
Well, I'm not an economist. I just know that we need balance in our economy, balance in our lives, and being able to have the interaction with people who know what they're doing, know their products, and can help advise us is really necessary. Plus, the flow of money that stays in our town simply enriches Corvallis rather than have the money go elsewhere.
Well, Sally Shaw of South Corvallis, I'd like to thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. For KORC News, I'm Trevor Sayre. 17 former Corvallis City Councilors, including a former mayor, recently penned a letter to the current Corvallis mayor and city councilors in opposition to a resolution that threatens to expel Councilor Charlene Ellis from the city council due to a novel interpretation of the Corvallis City Charter. Making the case for opposition to the resolution, the councilors state in the letter that the language of the section of the Corvallis City Charter under dispute, 23F, is very clear and is merely intended to stop corrupt self-dealing in cases such as a city councilor ordering the city manager to appoint a particular person for a particular role. A councilor asking the city manager about a particular role is not asking for an appointment. The language of Section 23F, according to the letter, also plainly allows Councilor Ellis to discuss and suggest to the city manager that the position be filled. And, of course, city councilors are uniquely tasked with evaluating the performance of the city manager and his inability to meet the hiring needs of the city despite his nearly $250,000 annual salary. Lastly, the city charter is up for interpretation by the city councilors themselves and no one else, as they are the primary authority for interpreting the charter. Not the city manager, not the mayor, and not anybody but the council. And that this decision will likely be the most important decision each council member will make during their tenures. For KORC News, I'm Trevor Sayre.
This is a message from the Veterans for Peace Linus Pauling chapter. In the waning days of 2023, South Africa filed charges of genocide against Israel in the World Court. Whatever the court decides, it is clear that Israel is not making any serious effort to minimize civilian casualties. No other country has ever used two-ton bombs to conduct saturation bombing of a civilian population center, let alone one as densely packed as the Gaza Strip. These unguided bombs are lethal within a 9-block radius of the blast site, and they are being dropped on or near hospitals, schools, mosques, and residential areas. There were over 21,000 deaths among the residents of Gaza, the vast majority of which are non-combatants. 40% are children. Why does this matter to you? Under the Geneva Conventions, every nation is responsible for preventing or stopping genocide. Yet the United States continues to supply weapons to Israel. It is our responsibility to do our part to end the slaughter. Join the weekly demonstrations, Saturdays at noon at the Corvallis Courthouse. Call and write your legislators. Do whatever you can to mobilize family and friends. Learn more about how you can get involved by going to the website of the Linus Pauling Chapter, Veterans for Peace, at bfpcorvallis.org.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
KORC is looking for volunteer local reporters to tell the stories that aren't getting told. So if you have something to share, an expert opinion, or even just anything cool you think people should know about, write us at info@korcfm.com and let's talk. And join us on Sundays to hear local news, interviews, and stories that aren't getting told anywhere else.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard every Sunday afternoon here on KORC from 1 to 2 p.m. You can find us locally on 105.9 FM. We are streaming worldwide at korcfm.com. The Corvallis School District announces the upcoming Benton County Career Convention, an event tailored toward 11th graders in our community. This is set to take place on February 26th at Oregon State University. That's a Monday. And this annual convention aims to provide students with real-world insights and experiential learning opportunities. The local school district is reaching out to the community to invite volunteers to contribute to the success of this event. There are several roles available for volunteers, including mock interviewers, where you will help students hone their interview skills by participating in mock interviews. Also, career panel participants, where you can share your professional journey and insights on a career panel. Event support, where you can assist in checking in and directing students to ensure a smooth and organized experience. Or community partners. You can be a community partner to this effort by sharing services, internship opportunities, or information on summer employment for young people. Please note that all volunteers are required to complete the Corvallis School District volunteer application, which is online at the Corvallis School District website, which I will give in just a moment. This is an opportunity for community members to play an active role in shaping the future of our students. By contributing your time and expertise, you are part of their learning experience, and you can be a crucial part in creating an engaging learning environment. For more information, you are encouraged to contact High School Coordinator Nikki McFarland at 541-757-3966. That phone number is 541-757-3966 for High School Coordinator Nikki McFarland. You can go online to www.csd509j.net. That's csd509j.net. That is the website for the Corvallis School District. That's the upcoming Benton County Career Convention taking place at Oregon State University, Monday, February 26th. There is more information at csd509j.net, the Corvallis School District website where qualified applicants can also search available careers in the school district. This is KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Kroll.
We're listening to an example of Tuvan throat singing. The Corvallis Museum and Cultural Center and Corvallis Experiments in Noise is proud to present Shaman Chinggis Kham conducting an authentic ritual for powerful healing while sharing his personal algeis, an ancient genre of spirit song. The evening will include Errington de Dioniso presenting Voice Mask, a musical performance ritual improvised to showcase his variety of extended vocal techniques. As a punk ethnomusicologist, Errington has traveled the world in search of primordially potent sounds. You're invited for this evening of Tuvan shamanism and throat singing on Tuesday, January 16th at 6 p.m. at the Corvallis Museum and Cultural Center, 411 Southwest 2nd Street in downtown, across from Robnett's Hardware.
For KORC News, I'm Trevor Sayre. 17 former Corvallis City Councilors, including a former mayor, recently penned a letter to the current Corvallis mayor and city councilors in opposition to a resolution that threatens to expel Councilor Charlene Ellis from the city council due to a novel interpretation of the Corvallis City Charter. Making the case for opposition to the resolution, the councilors state in the letter that the language of the section of the Corvallis City Charter under dispute, 23F, is very clear and is merely intended to stop corrupt self-dealing in cases such as a city councilor ordering the city manager to appoint a particular person for a particular role. A councilor asking the city manager about a particular role is not asking for an appointment. The language of Section 23F, according to the letter, also plainly allows Councilor Ellis to discuss and suggest to the city manager that the position be filled. And, of course, city councilors are uniquely tasked with evaluating the performance of the city manager and his inability to meet the hiring needs of the city despite his nearly $250,000 annual salary. Lastly, the city charter is up for interpretation by the city councilors themselves and no one else, as they are the primary authority for interpreting the charter. Not the city manager, not the mayor, and not anybody but the council. And that this decision will likely be the most important decision each council member will make during their tenures. For KORC News, I'm Trevor Sayre.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
Well, howdy, everybody. It's Lava Lamp Larry, and we've got another session of Beaver Tales. That would be all the sports that you see at the OSU Beavers complex over there. You know the one we're talking about. All right, so let's talk about some Beaver stuff. So first of all, the football team has played its final Pac-12 game and its final Pac-12 season. This is a big turning point for Oregon State and, of course, Washington State, the final two remaining members of what used to be the Pac-12. Yeah, they're still playing basketball and baseball and those other sports, but the big one is football. Football is the tail that wags the dog all around the country. But in their final year in the Pac-12, the Beavers were right on the edge of real greatness. They were 8 wins, 2 losses, and leading the number 4 undefeated Washington Huskies late in the game, only to lose that game by 2 points. Then in the next game, they, of course, were playing the Ducks in Eugene and lost that game too. So they ended up 8-4 on the season, but they still got a bid to the Sun Bowl against Notre Dame. Now, normally you'd be excited for that because you always want a chance to beat a great team like Notre Dame. Unfortunately, by the time the game was played, many of the Beavers players had opted to get into the portal. And like on Star Trek, the portal takes you to another universe, or in this case, another university. And so missing their starting quarterback and missing so many key players, they were swamped in the Sun Bowl. And the Beavers ended their season at 8-5. Next year is a different story. Next year, they're going to be playing Mountain West schools. That's like Fresno State, UNLV, San Diego State, San Jose State, Wyoming, Colorado State, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to play those guys in football. It's definitely a step down from USC and UCLA and Arizona and Washington and Oregon, but they will continue their series with Oregon. They are signed up to play the Ducks at least for the next 2 seasons. And you have to ask yourself, man, that's got to be a regular all the time. We'll see how that goes. All right, next up on my docket is wrestling. Now, I have to say, I'm not a big wrestling fan, but I called my friend, who is a big wrestling fan, and we went to the Beavers versus the number 1 Penn State Nittany Lions. This was a few weeks ago. And not having been to a wrestling match before, I thought, all right, no problem. I'll just drive up there. I'll park. I'll walk up to the ticket booth a few minutes before it's supposed to start. Well, when I get there, it was like a football game had broken out. I could not find a place to park. The parking lot around the football stadium was completely full. Finally got in there, and then to my amazement, I joined a crowd of 8,500 Beaver wrestling fans, 8,500 people watching wrestling in Gill Coliseum. It was an amazing sight. Unfortunately, Penn State prevailed. All right, let's talk about what's coming up. On the women's side, we've got some basketball coming up this weekend, actually. ASU, that game is probably on right now as you're listening to this. And then the following weekend, the Beavers travel down to the Bay Area for a couple of games before coming back home on January 26th to play Colorado and January 28th to play Utah. On the men's side, they are on the road this weekend at Utah and Colorado. They come back on January 25th to play Arizona in a big game. Arizona currently ranked number 8th. That would be on a Thursday night. On the 27th, on a Saturday afternoon, they're playing Arizona State, and then the men go back on the road for a couple of games before returning in early February to play the Washington Schools. All right, so that's my report. It's amazing wrestling stuff, the demise of the Pac-12, but the Beavers are going to be here, and I hope that you will get out there and see a game of whatever kind of game you want. They've got it all. Reporting for KORC, this is Lava Lamp Larry. I'll see you next time.
Dr. Cornell West will be visiting Corvallis the evening of Monday, January 22nd. He will be at the Oregon State University campus from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lascelles Stewart Center. It's free and open to the public and will be live streamed on live.oregonstate.edu for those who are unable to attend in person. Dr. Cornell West will join Dr. Robert George in a conversation focused on the role of higher education in restoring civic dialogue. The talk addresses the urgent need for universities to lead the way in reviving the art of civil discourse in a society increasingly characterized by division and confrontation. This event is co-sponsored by the Office of the Provost and the College of Business. Dr. West and Dr. George share contrasting ideologies. During this event, both will share insights on how higher education can cultivate a culture where challenging discussions are conducted with empathy, respect, and a shared pursuit of truth, thereby reinforcing the foundations of a vibrant democratic society. This event is slated for Monday, January 22nd, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Lascelles Stewart Center. It's free and open to the public and will be live streamed on live.oregonstate.edu for those who are unable to attend in person. For more information, you can do an internet search for Difficult Conversations: The University's Role in Restoring Civic Dialogue with Drs. Robert George and Cornell West. You're listening to KORC, public, listener-funded community radio. This is a message from the Veterans for Peace Linus Pauling chapter. In the waning days of 2023, South Africa filed charges of genocide against Israel in the World Court. Whatever the court decides, it is clear that Israel is not making any serious effort to minimize civilian casualties. No other country has ever used two-ton bombs to conduct saturation bombing of a civilian population center, let alone one as densely packed as the Gaza Strip. These unguided bombs are lethal within a 9-block radius of the blast site, and they are being dropped on or near hospitals, schools, mosques, and residential areas. There were over 21,000 deaths among the residents of Gaza, the vast majority of which are non-combatants. 40% are children. Why does this matter to you? Under the Geneva Conventions, every nation is responsible for preventing or stopping genocide. Yet the United States continues to supply weapons to Israel. It is our responsibility to do our part to end the slaughter. Join the weekly demonstrations, Saturdays at noon at the Corvallis Courthouse. Call and write your legislators. Do whatever you can to mobilize family and friends. Learn more about how you can get involved by going to the website of the Linus Pauling chapter, Veterans for Peace, at bfpcorvallis.org.
This is Phil Farrell reporting for KORC. Not just this past Wednesday, on January the 10th of this year of 2024, I did a little interview, a street interview, with a couple who appeared to be living on the sidewalk. So they were very friendly looking, very easy to approach. Good at, I could tell good energy right away. And I asked to do a little interview just to spread the word and remind people that homeless people are people too. And sometimes you got to look through some things to realize who the person is inside. And a lot of these people are really nice people. They're really talented people. They're just going through some rough times. And, you know, I ain't say no names, but I've had some family members homeless at one time. So, you know, we got to just do what we can to help these people out and just get them through these rough times. And so, yeah.
My name is Bear, B3AR. Sheena Hopkins, to those who don't know. And I am an artist here who has been recognized by two different galleries. I enjoy arts of all kinds, arts and crafts. When it comes to jewelry making, I've been doing that since 2018. A lot of people in the streets have just a wide variety of backgrounds. You never know who you're going to meet. And please approach every person that you meet with some kind of respect. Because at the end of the day, respect is a gift. It's not something that you have to earn. It's something that you give to your community so that you can receive it yourself. And as far as some short little tidbits here, positivity could possibly change our perspective as well as our environment. As well as one last parting reminder. This is Bear with a public service announcement. It is complacency that kills, not the cars, people. So do please be careful as a pedestrian and as a driver.
The Keyboard Kid approves this message. The Keyboard Kid for President.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Phil Farrell for KORC, and I'm here with Bear. And one more time, what's your name?
Keyboard Kid.
We love you, Corvallis.
Yeah, I'm digging the Yamaha keyboard. Do you guys play live music here at all?
Yeah, I'll play you a quick one.
Oh, yeah, that would be great, actually.
I play guitar.
And he's over here making some jewelry. Do you sell the jewelry?
Yep. Well, I do it by donation.
Donation, yeah. Yep. And it's all handmade, and he's going to play us a live tune.
Changing the world with a note of a song, cause I'm living it up large on the Woody Guthrie side on the stars. Keeping music alive in most of their eyes, cause I sit in no demise, all I know is that I ride. If you had a chance, just a moment to sit back and are remembered to the
The Keyboard Kid forever. The Keyboard Kid live in action on YouTube.
Thank you. Hey, can you play like a beat or something that I can freestyle for real quick?
I have one more interjection.
Yes.
I also would like to remind you guys, please do tip your musicians, whether it be us or anybody else busking on the street. Sometimes this is all that we get, and it's not out of any disrespect that we ask. It is because we are still providing a service, people.
Yeah,
it is for donation.
I got you.
I just like to point that out because we don't want to be disrespectful in any way.
Yes. Hey, let's see if I can think of something. Yo. My man Keyboard Kid, he's making the beat. I'm freestyling here live on the street. This is for KORC Community Radio, so listen to me, hey. Slowing it down, tell you about what's going on in your town. Hey, they're people too, so give them respect. I'm just giving the people a reality check. Hey, it's night and it still be cold, but we're out here keeping it hot. Just keeping it going, keeping it flowing. You already know it's Phil for real in the place, so let it be knowing. Hey, yo, he's the keyboard kid. Check what we do, and it's how we did. Hey.
Every day I wake up in a rage just to keep music alive and not go insane, cause I feel like I'm going crazier than Rick and Morty. I'm about to put the game in, it's Rick and Morty. I go hard, yeah. Till the death of me on these bricks.
Yeah, we're freestyling right now, off the top of the brain. We're on the sidewalk, we do it like it's on stage. Hey, who got that? It's the empty blaze. We on KORC, we doing it our way. Doing it our way, every day. Hey. It's going around the way, so get your eyes open. We're doing it live. Hey, we smoking. Yeah, I'm just making it up, but yeah, hey.
I improvise everything.
I got to meet some friends right down at the bar here. So this is just an on-the-spot interview, but you know what? I appreciate it very much. With the Keyboard Kid and Bear.
Yes, sir.
This has been Phil For Real for KORC.
Phil For Real is the realest.
And Thieves, we love you guys.
And
all of our other community.
Keyboard Kid forever.
Yeah. Check out the Keyboard Kid.
Kidding. Live in action.
Yes. And we're out.
During heavy rainfall, localized flooding can cause unexpected hazards. If you see significant floodwaters on the road, do not attempt to drive through, especially if the road is marked closed. Even heavy-duty vehicles can lose traction and begin to float away, which is then a game changer for safety and, in some cases, your survival. 2 inches or more is all it takes to lift some vehicles to float off the road. Do not drive through floodwaters or closed roads. You can visit tripcheck.com or call 511 to get updates on highway conditions. If your property is flooding and you need to evacuate, remember to unplug all electronics and appliances and turn off your electricity at your circuit box. Also, turn off your water and gas valves. Have an emergency plan and be ready to follow evacuation orders, particularly if you live in a flood zone. Benton County flooding is caused by rivers and streams overflowing during high rain or storm events. Localized flooding can happen as a result of overloaded, blocked, or inadequate stormwater drainage systems that cause sheet flow into streets and low-lying areas, then pooling in yards, sewer backups, and basement or first floor flooding. Most flooding occurs between November and April, though with a changing climate and often increasingly catastrophic weather events, it's good to always be prepared. You can see your flood hazard zone by doing an internet search for My Flood Hazard Zone and follow the link to the FEMA.gov website, FEMA.gov. You're listening to KORC, Community Radio for Corvallis on 105.9 LPFM or streaming at KORCFM.com.
You're listening to KORC News, Music and Civics. I'm Trevor Sayre with your Corvallis City meetings for the week of January 15th, 2024. On Tuesday, January 16th, the Corvallis City Council will be holding an executive session at 5:15 p.m. to discuss a real property transaction. Downtown Fire Station in the Council Chambers, 400 Northwest Harrison Boulevard. Following that meeting at 6 p.m., the Corvallis City Council will also be holding a regular meeting at the same location, 400 Northwest Harrison Boulevard. On Wednesday, January 17th, the Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Advisory Board will meet virtually at 5 p.m. For details on how to join the meeting, see corvallisoregon.gov. Following that meeting at 6:30 p.m., the Planning Commission will be meeting virtually as well. See corvallisoregon.gov for details. On Thursday, January 18th, the Corvallis City Council will be holding a work session which will be held virtually and in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the virtual meeting. And finally, on Saturday, January 20th at 10 a.m., Corvallis City Councilors Napack and Chaplin will be holding Government Comment Corner in the lobby of the Corvallis Benton County Library. Feel free to stop by to say hello and ask questions about local government. 645 Northwest Monroe Avenue here in Corvallis. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
As Americans commemorate the 20th century civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr., we'd like to highlight a bit of history that doesn't get as much attention. Did you know that the Federal Bureau of Investigation has been implicated in the assassination of Martin Luther King, along with state and local law enforcement that were charged to protect him? J. Edgar Hoover, the founder of the FBI, waged a war against African Americans and civil rights leadership through the use of his unconstitutional counterintelligence program, also known as COINTELPRO, which among other things had the goal of, quote, preventing the rise of a black messiah. This program involved planting informants and aggressors in the ranks of political groups in order to subvert and coerce them into more violent activities than they otherwise would have, a tactic unfortunately still used to serve the political establishment today. Claiming on the surface that King was a scary communist sympathizer due to his stance against the Vietnam War, the FBI bugged his hotel rooms, attempted to entrap him, and even sent him a threatening letter encouraging him to commit suicide. At one point in a press conference, Hoover even publicly denounced King as the most notorious liar in the country. To call these statements inflammatory in their context of the 1960s is an understatement. King was being demonized by overt racists in the highest offices of leadership, empowering those who wished him dead. William Sullivan, head of the FBI's Division 5, wrote, "He stands head and shoulder over all other Negro leaders put together when it comes to influencing great masses of Negroes. We must mark him now, if we have not done so before, as the most dangerous Negro of the future of this nation from the standpoint of communism, the Negro, and national security." That's the FBI. These were the notions motivating the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation's interest in the movement of civil rights and racial justice. The FBI had no less than 5 paid informants reporting to their Memphis field office on King's activities, including King's trusted friend, Ernest Withers. The Memphis PD had also been conducting surveillance on King, as had the Military Intelligence Division since 1957. State and local law enforcement also made mysterious decisions in the days leading up to the assassination. The very officer who stood on security detail in the Lorraine Motel parking lot the night before the killing was himself a paid FBI informant. His name was Merrill McAuliffe, and he later joined the CIA, an agency with a history of its own, shall we say, questionable methods. Additionally, on the day of the assassination, 2 black security details from Memphis PD were removed from guarding the Lorraine Motel, including one who had protected King on 2 previous visits. This request was made by a superior 1 day prior and was granted. Also, 2 black firefighters from the station across the street from the motel were also mysteriously given temporary transfers to other stations on the night before King's death. It's also worth noting that despite the official investigation and conviction of James Earl Ray, the charged assassin, he later recanted and claimed he was a patsy in a larger conspiracy, a claim which Martin Luther King's own family believed and has repeatedly defended. Ray claimed that in 1967, a Cuban man named Raul had recruited him for a supposed gun-running enterprise, explaining his fingerprints on the rifle used to kill King. Some have wondered how Ray, a lifelong convict with a history of bungling his work, and getting caught, had obtained a fake passport and evaded one of the largest manhunts in history for over 2 months. The owner of a restaurant adjacent to the Lorraine Motel later made conflicting claims that he had been paid a large sum of money by mafia asset Frank Liberto to host meetings and conceal a gun inside the restaurant. Multiple witnesses close to Liberto have since testified to his involvement in King's assassination. Some evidence exists suggesting that Hoover's successor at the FBI, Clarence Kelly, deliberately destroyed documents related to the murder of King, which detailed the activities of informants who were high-ranking Ku Klux Klan members. In light of Martin Luther King's historic contribution to civil rights progress in the United States, and of the politico-media establishment's shallow and opportunistic whitewashing of King's legacy since his death, we feel that the questions surrounding his assassination are still worth asking. King was not the calm, narrow-minded dreamer only concerned with quote-unquote black issues that national media would have us think that he was. He was, in fact, a radical who sought a grand alliance between races and among the working class to target the systemic oppression that still ensnares Americans today. He was a humanist intellectual who saw clearly the problems that economic inequality and state-sanctioned violence have brought us. On Martin Luther King Day, and every day, we should remember King's radical legacy, and we should not stop asking why and how it was cut so tragically short.
This is Dan Kroll. Thanks for joining us on today's edition of KORC News, Music, and Civics. As I record this, I am standing inside of a historic building in downtown Corvallis. Rob Netz Hardware at the corner of 2nd and Adams. In the background, one of the proprietors uses an adding machine, and the other proprietor in this family business is at the counter, assisting a customer who has questions regarding key making. And in the background, one of their longtime employees is sorting items, rotating the stock, moving boxes as this operation continues on. But it is only a limited number of days before this operation closes its doors forever. This building has been here since 1850, and since the year of 1893, there has been a connection to the Robnetz family. It was founded by R.M. Wade, and the Robnetz family is a descendant of R.M. Wade. And Tori Lockwood, who is married to Scott, Tori herself is a Robnetz, sixth generation, and her husband Scott joins me now. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
This is Dan Kroll, and I should start by saying I'm a little bit biased as I report this because I am a longtime customer of Robnetz Hardware. I am a fan of the wood floors, the charm of the pictures on the wall of historic Corvallis, the hardware store feel, the authentic American hardware store feel that you all have.
It's the smell that brings them back.
The smell is certainly part of it.
The wood floors and the smell, and that's the first thing you hear from people when they walk into the store. If they're new or if they've been coming in, they keep coming back because of the smell of the wood floors.
That is certainly an important factor. And as we sit here in your office, I see a book called Old Fashioned Hardware Stores, which was written several years back by Walter H. Olson. And you all are featured in this book.
Yes, there's a story in there about this store. Yeah.
Yep. It talks about hardware stores across the country, descriptions, stories, and advice. And I do remember picking up a copy of that book because I was very excited that you all had made it.
Yeah, we had it open out front on the counter there for a while when it came out. So yeah, if somebody wants to come by and read that story, they can certainly come by and do that. We have some other books and things you can look through, too. We found inventory sheets from 1919, so back in the 1920s, that are kind of fun to look through when you see, you know, saw blades for 29 cents and this, that, and the other thing for a quarter. So.
And we should mention, as you are liquidating everything in the store, there are all sorts of items for sale, and that includes some vintage thermometers and some old clocks, which I personally have an interest in. What other kinds of unusual items, in addition to your inventory, are you selling in these last days?
Well, there's a lot of promotional, like I said, promotional display items that we have on the walls in here, and we have a display of old wooden planes that's hanging up on the wall and been here forever, and that's up for sale. There's an old, I think it's a print, I'm not sure, of a famous painting of a moose is hanging up on the wall that's for sale. We do have a Coke machine. We've just racks and those types of things. Old wooden boxes that have some old military boxes that they used to ship to us in. So, and they did used to sell ammo and rifles here back in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
I guess one of the main questions on a lot of people's mind might be, why is Robnett's Hardware coming to a close?
Well, I wish there was just one easy answer, but this one, you know, takes time, and a lot of things have been probably building towards that. I mean, back when downtowns were the center of communities, I mean, this place was here and that part of that center, and over the years as things have grown and changed, I mean, the centers have moved out, different stores and things have moved in and made the trip to downtown a little bit different than it was back in the 40s through the 90s. I suppose you could go that late, the 90s. So that's been a struggle. Also, just in the last few years, we've seen the bigger stores come into town. We know who they are, and they take a bite. And then we went through the pandemic, and that took a bite. And then we tried to recoup from that. And it's been a slow haul from that point there, just due to a lot of market conditions. I mean, we just haven't quite come back to where we were, not so much 2 or 3 years ago, but maybe 8 to 10 years ago. So,
and not to mention the internet being an option.
Well, yeah. So, and that was all kicked in hard, I think, in the pandemic era, the 2 years or whatever it was that took place. And so that really, we have found that has been going on for some time. People would come in the store and say, well, I can find this on the internet, or I can do this on the internet, and use us to kind of study products, but not maybe pick them up all the time. So, and we deal with a lot of smaller product lines rather than you see at a lot of the bigger, more retail type hardware stores.
And I think one feature that is commonly true in Corvallis, at least since I've been here, I moved here in 2005 after graduating college. I feel like shopping local is a local value. Is that still as important as it maybe once was, do you feel?
I really think it's more. I think it's there's quite a uptick in people thinking that way. I really do. And so I think that's there. I think there's room for small stores. I think it can happen. It just, you got to be, you know, positioned correctly. We're just kind of living in an era in this store where we've been for the last 100 years and haven't made any changes or managed any changes that would help us in that direction.
One factor that a lot of people might assume was part of the decision to close up shop here might be high rent, as that is often a big cause for a number of small businesses in Corvallis not hanging around.
Yeah, we're not upset with that at all, and I don't think that doesn't have really anything to do with our decision. We've been thinking about retiring for, I don't know, 10 years. So it's been a while that it's been on our mind to try to move out, and we tried to move some other things, people in, and Those things just didn't work out, and we've had a couple of offers, but again, they came when a time when the store wasn't at its peak. You know, it had dropped off, and so the offers weren't what we thought we could work with, and so decided to try to hang on a little bit longer and see if things would come back, and they haven't. But the rent situation is something that we agreed to, we understand, and we don't think that's not part of our problem.
Well, I should ask then, if somebody wanted to buy the hardware store, is that still an option, or is the decision final that the store is just going to close?
I think, they'd have to walk in this week and say, here's a bunch of money and plop it down on the counter, but I suppose it still could happen if somebody walked in. We've had a couple of people in the last week that said what it would take, and, you know, I don't think their thoughts are... I just don't think they've thought it through. So
it's a romantic idea, isn't it?
It's romantic. It is to come in and run a hardware store and get your buddies together, and yeah, we'll get a group of people to come and do it. We've tried, and we've had people look into turning this into a co-op. So that
like a worker-owned cooperative.
Yeah, and it just didn't pan out. It takes more time and energy than they were willing to put into it, and then what we were willing to put into it at the time. So.
When is the official close date?
February. We've moved it up, actually. We were talking a couple of weeks ago about going through the end of March, but we're going to just go through the end of February. So 29th will probably be our day. We should be done.
Yes, initially I thought it was going to be March 31st, and I was kind of mentally thinking about coming here several times to pick up items I might need. I personally have enough items, although I am eyeing some of your cool thermometers myself.
Yeah, they're nice. We've had several people looking at them, and we've kind of looked around to try to find some reasonable pricing to start with the Goulds, the thermometers, the signage, some of the fixtures that we have around here. We have, again, that Coke machine, and we're taking bids on the Coke machine. We have a coffee grinding machine that used to be around in the 20s and 30s that's out here on the floor, and that's open for bids as well.
We're speaking with Scott Lockwood, who for 29 years has worked here at Robnett's Hardware at the corner of 2nd and Adams in downtown Corvallis, and at age 68, he is retiring next month along with his spouse, Tori Lockwood. She is a part of the Robnett family, who has had a connection to owning this very store since 1893. Those of you who have come down to this location know that it is a historic hardware store, and now with all the big box stores moving in and just becoming a part of the reality, this is the end of an era.
Well. Yeah, part of the reality as well.
Part of our new reality.
It's more and more difficult. Well, I guess I just wanted to say that we want to acknowledge and thank, you know, the customers that have been coming into the store, and I think a lot of them have come back because of the people that have worked here at the store. A lot of them have worked here for 10, 15, 20 years and more, and people got to know them and enjoyed working with them and would come and ask them by name. So it's, you know, it's a part of that structure that has helped keep the store going. And then the businesses and the county, the city, the university, that they've all came in, and a lot of the smaller businesses that have been coming in over the years. So we'd just like to thank them all for helping us keep the store running for the last 48, 50 years anyway.
And until the end of February, those of you out there listening can come down to the Robnett's Hardware and say hello to Scott. Some of you may not have been here for a while. A lot of times people come and go. They leave town, then they come back after a few years. The end of an era is coming at the end of February. And we do have a local hardware store in town still, Spaeth's. Mm-hmm. Though we have now an Ace Hardware that has moved in, Wilco, they whose name I don't even want to mention, but Home Depot. I was not very happy when they moved in, and that was a long time ago. And I remember having the thought, this would have been in the late 2000s when they came in, I had the thought that that would negatively impact Robnett's Hardware.
Well, it did. I mean, anything that comes in does takes a pinch for a while, and we did recoup from that. I think people went there. I mean, we recouped. The community still came to us. So so I think we made it through that. We have always what I call the smalls. We've always carried the small stuff. and in smaller quantities than you find in most of any of the big retail stores that are out there. And there's a lot of them now. Corvallis has Harbor Freight, has Ace, like you said, Wilco Coastal, Spaeth Lumber is there. Bi-Mart is carrying, you know, Odds and Ends Hardware and that type of stuff. So there's a lot of competitions moved in the last, well, few years.
One thing I don't think could be replaced is your hallway full of nuts and bolts. Okay. Can we take a quick walk into there? That is certainly one of the fixtures that I am going to very much miss as Robnett's Hardware is going out of business at the end of February, because just about any size nut, bolt, screw,
washer, T-nut. We're bolt whisperers here. You know, you need to be able to look at the head of a bolt and tell what it is, and where you'll find it in the room.
That is true. Yeah, there have been many times I have come in here, and you've been able to eyeball a size that I had back when I had the bicycle taxi pedicab business.
Yeah, that's right. That's
this
right.
room that yep. we're in saved me a number of times.
Yeah, a lot of 6 mil, fine thread, standard thread. Yeah. So we've got it all in here.
There's metric and otherwise?
Well, you've got, grade 2, grade 5, fine thread, coarse thread, all the lengths. You've got T-nuts, jam nuts, SAE washers. You got brass. You got socket head cap screws, flathead cap screws. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot. Carriage bolts, galvanized, stainless steel. Anything else? All thread. So, yeah, tons of stuff.
About how many different compartments are there?
God, I don't. I've ever counted them, and I don't know what I ever want to. What do we got, 35 feet here?
At 40 least.
Feet, 40 feet of both sides covered to 5 foot tall. So
probably around 500, 400 or 500 maybe?
No, I'd say more than that. 1500.
Has any unfortunate event ever taken place where someone came through here and threw a bunch of them on the floor?
I just did it the other day. I dropped a whole box, assortment box of cotter pins. I let them sit there for a while I walked around. I came back and swept them up. But yeah, that does happen. One time we came in here, left at our normal time 10 winters ago, and came back and drawers were pushed out from behind. Yeah, we had several, as you can see. These are like 18-inch long drawers that pull out, and they got our nuts and bolts in them. And they're not light. Some of them weigh a few pounds.
Why were they pushed out?
We never did figure it out. They were sitting out like that throughout the, you know, just up and
you
down this
someone
aisle.
Someone may have come walking it through.
Either that or a big strong rat. Or a ghost. Could have been a ghost. We always blamed it on the ghost.